The healthcare detective Frank Lally has written a book for Simon & Schuster about how to get affordable healthcare. Called Your Best Healthcare Now. It's available online, in-store, wherever fine books are sold. Mr. Lally is also the health correspondent for Parade and the former editor of Money and George magazines and senior advisor to healthcare or at healthcare.com. And for those of you who have been listening to him for a while, there was a trial, a magical trial at the University of Pennsylvania a while ago. And Frank is here with news.
Yes, I am. I'm here and I'm well. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I mean, you know, the overall message is that you can live with a serious illness. You can live with cancer. You can live with things that threaten your life. I've had a blood cancer. It's called multiple myeloma. I've had it now for 12 years, and I'm doing fine. Does it cause me to worry from time to time? You bet your life it does, but I'm doing fine. So back 12 years ago, my doctors feared that I might be getting multiple myeloma just from my blood work and the fact that I was fatigued and a couple of others, things like that, and anemic. But actually, my system was smoldering, and that is, I sort of had this blood cancer. It wasn't causing any real symptoms as of any seriousness, but they could detect it, but it hadn't really activated. So it really wasn't cancer yet. It was like this precancerous stage, a smoldering stage. Some people live that way for 20 years or longer. They never know they're in danger. And in some cases, in most cases, after about 18 months of this smoldering, a switch is flicked and it becomes real cancer. So that happened to me, and I got a phone call, actually, while I was in London working for Reader's Digest International in a little hotel room, from my doctor saying, hey, the latest blood test, you actually now have multiple myeloma. I could feel, you know, it's London, the room was smaller already, but it was the walls were closing in on me. And I heard myself say to the doctor, so this is deadly serious. And he said, you know, it's serious, but it's not necessarily deadly. We have medicines and we'll have more. And we think we can keep you in pretty good shape for a long time. So I ended up with a guy named Ken Anderson up at Dana-Farber. Where he had done all this research for on a medicine called Revlimid. He gave me Revlimid, and I went for years and years and years just taking a pill a day, and I was fine. But then about 4 years ago, the pill just stopped working. And the way I discovered that is I fell down a flight of stairs backwards at one of my doctor's houses. I was over there for a dinner party, and I fell. Well,
good timing.
Tumor. Yeah, at the timing and the place. But it turned out I had this big tumor that I didn't realize I had on my left hip, and it weakened my left leg, and who knows, down I go, down the stairs. I'm actually fine from the fall, but then they did x-rays, and they see tumors all over my body. So, okay. Then it's time for real intervention, and I got a stem cell transfer at Memorial Sloan Kettering. And by the way, that's a real ordeal, a stem cell transfer, and it didn't work. So, all right, when all else fails, and this is what I tell people all the time, when all else fails, that's the time to really pursue a clinical trial. They're experimental. They're not proven at all. They're testing stuff. You don't want to rush into a clinical trial. Never, never, never. But when all else fails, you really need one. So I was in that position 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago. Luckily, I became the last person in a 20-patient trial. And you're right, Jill, it was down at the Perlman Center. That's Ron Perlman's father, a real philanthropist, down in Philadelphia. My doctor said, stop Myra down there. He's fantastic. So what happened is they harvest the T cells. These are our fierce fighters of disease. And it's essentially a transfusion in one out one arm into the other, and they capture the T cells, rush it to the lab, add the magic sauce that they hope becomes a $1 billion drug from Novartis in this case. And then they pump it back into your body and, you know, hey, it's supposed to work. Well, it doesn't always work. Okay, but it worked for me. And my tumors just shriveled up like raisins. Now, each year, I go back down to the Perelman Center and I get a head-to-toe PET scan looking for tumors. They inject you with radioactive stuff, and it's essentially a sugar-based substance that goes, if there's any cancer there, the sugar goes to the cancer, and it's essentially lights up. So you can light up like a Christmas tree, or they can be all dark. So that's always a suspense, and it makes me nervous worrying about it. But I just had it on Wednesday. I am completely cancer free. And that's miraculous, if not a miracle. Only half the people in the trial got any benefit at all from this medicine, which actually didn't turn out to be very successful. And most people, even the people who got some relief, got relief for only about 2 years. So I'm all the way entering my fifth year, and there's no one else who's gotten a better benefit than that. So I kind of go into the history, into the medical science books now. So as I said to you, Jill, and you said this would be a pretty good title for my autobiography that I'm not going to write. Way out on the bell curve. I am way out.
Lost on the bell curve.
I am way out there.
And do they have any explanation for that? I mean, other than your like really good intention?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things. I mean, first of all, when I needed a stem cell transplant, I got one. And you know, I was in a clinic setting. And I didn't think, and this was at Columbia Presbyterian, a great hospital, but I didn't think I was in a very good setting, and I didn't think I was getting enough attention from my doctor. So I fired him, and I moved on to Memorial Sloan Kettering, where I got Sergio Garalt, a fantastic doctor who really took a personal interest in me. And, you know, as he does in all his patients, I've got his home phone number from day one. And, you know, when I needed a clinical trial, he got on the phone and I got on the phone. We called every every center, major medical center in the country, trying to line up a spot for me. And that wouldn't have happened in a clinical setting. It wouldn't happen if I wasn't, you know, persistent as I was, and if I didn't have a doctor who was really on my side. So that's an important thing. If you don't have a doctor on your side and you're on your own, if you ignore and don't realize what medicines you're taking, and you know, you just hope for the best. You know, you're setting yourself up for failure. You've got to be much more proactive than that. So I think that was a big part of it. I didn't do it out of bravery, Jill. I did it out of fear. But I did it. So, in the process, my case has now made some contributions to medical science, and I'm actually very proud of that. You know, it for the very least, it has added more proof that you should put off a clinical trial for as long as you can. You know, I only did it after that stem cell didn't work, and then I really needed intervention, a serious experimental intervention. And the stem cell didn't do anything; it didn't shrink my tumors, but it strengthened my basic immune system. That's what the doctors think. So with your immune system strengthened just a bit more like that, you have more likely to get a success from the trial. So now Memorial Sloan Kettering has actually changed their procedures. When they go into their clinical trials, they have all the patients take a stem cell transfer first to set themselves up for success in a trial. And that is new. Now, I wrote about a woman named L'Oreal, if you may remember this, who was at the Perelman Center really early. And she had a stem cell. At that point, they were doing a stem cell followed immediately by the T cell immunity, and essentially, if that combination of things just back to back within days didn't kill her, it might cure her. Well, she was lucky; it cured her. Now that at least they give you some distance, You get the stem cell. It's a real ordeal. You recover enough from that, and then you go to the clinical trial. But the bottom line is still the bottom line. Stem cell is now part of the protocol, at least at Memorial Sloan Kettering and other places. They also learned from my case, and this is, again, what I said, wait until you really need this medicine, the T cell or any immunology or any of these clinical trials. You've got to wait until the disease has developed to a point where the trial can be successful. So the doctors at Perelman just tried this T cell intervention on newly diagnosed multiple myeloma patients, and it didn't work. So the theory is, if you don't have enough cancer in your body for the T cells to attack, then it isn't successful. So you got to think about those T cells, these that really fight disease. You got to think about them as kind of like the Roman army. You know, when they were expanding, they lived off the land. The more cells, and in those cases, the more countries they conquered, the bigger they became, the more recruits they got. And that's the way the T cells work. The more the T cells kill the cancer, the more T cells there are. It's an exploding benefit to the patient. So the T cells get bigger and they get stronger, and they work really as effectively as they possibly can. So Jill, that's, I mean, just one more thing about, you know, we when I got my booster shot for good old COVID, I asked you, you know, am I really immunocompromised? Because we hadn't done this trial yet. This head to toe yet. Am I immunocompromised or am I immunostrong? Well, now we know. Okay, I came out with this very clean bill of health. I am immunostrong. Now, and that's 12 years living with a blood cancer. Now, one more note. If that trial at Perelman had been a NIH, an NIH trial, a government trial, National Institutes of Health trial, I wouldn't have gotten in, because no one over 70 can get into an NIH trial. That is really wrongheaded. There shouldn't be an ageism barrier to whether a patient gets a treatment into a trial when they really need it to stay alive. I wouldn't be alive today if that had been an NIH trial, as opposed to a commercial trial where the commercial companies can accept people over 70 based on their need. So Jill, any thoughts, any questions?
I think that is fantastic. I mean, fantastic all the way, and just really good to have a thinking human being with that experience. And I think that what I would like to do, if you're willing, along the way, is just pursue more the idiosyncrasies of getting into these things, because, you know, that's the sort of thing that really ends up being more. You know, what I'm going to say, the broader point is, on top of having to worry about getting into a trial, and you had to worry about that, and
yes, indeed,
your physical health, which, you know, all of which knocks you back, let's just say 50% on the "gee, I can focus and be optimistic" scale, you know, to be up against arbitrary exclusions is not right. So
no,
I think that
no.
that's just I think that's worth a little more detecting and working on.
Well, the NIH should really reconsider that. Age, you know, chronological age tells you something, okay, but it's not
everything.
No, not at all. It's especially in an instance where you have tried everything, right, for years and years, all the medicines, all the protocols, and nothing's working, okay? And at that point, what is your physical health and what is your odds of actually getting a benefit from this intervention? That should be the test. At one point, I was told, I'm sorry, there are three people vying for the last spot in this trial, and I'm sorry you didn't make the cut, okay? That was on a Friday. Now, that was the low point of my 12 years with this blood cancer. On Monday, I got a phone call saying, oh, sorry, it was a mistake on my part. You're back in. Okay. Now, what happened is there's a real conversation by the doctors at, and this happens in all these clinical trials, all the doctors at the facility, at the hospital, at the cancer center, they meet at least weekly and they debate who should get into the trial. Okay. And it's a real debate. And every doctor is a champion for their patient, or they say, okay, we've gotten to a point where this person is too sick and will not be, will not benefit. So having, first of all, Sergio Garal to get on the phone and call these cancer centers with me pleading for a spot on the trial, which failed in one instance after another, and then finally connecting with a guy like Stoudemire, who then championed me in these meetings. So he missed a meeting and I was out, and he came back and I was in. Look, is luck involved? Yeah, there is, but there's also persistence and finding partners who can help you. If you do that, you can live with serious illness, but you need to be engaged and you need to be a champion for yourself as well. That's my message for today.
Thank you, Frank, the healthcare detective and senior advisor to healthcare.com. Send questions or concerns about finding affordable healthcare to healthcare detective at robinhoodradio.com. Frank will try to address as many of your questions as he can on future broadcasts. Also, look for his book, Your Best Healthcare Now, available online, in store, and on my desk.